Hi, I'm Life Coach Mama, a life coach for moms who want to find more joy and more peace in their marriage and in their parenting. My husband and I have 8 kids. We love having a big family and often hear the phrase, "You've got your hands full." Come and join me as I interview moms of all ages and in all stages from around the world. Be encouraged, find inspiration and confidence that you can handle another kid. And if this is a topic that interests you, please check out my book, Have Another Kid Without Losing It, available for purchase today on Amazon by Lauren Loboda. Well, welcome back, listeners. Today, I am thrilled to have on my show, Leah. She is a mutual friend. We have a mutual friend, Bernadette, and she connected us via Facebook. And thankfully, Leah was willing to come on the show today and talk to us about being a mom of a big family, about being a biological mother and a stepmother, and just all the changes, the good and the bad, the stresses and the joys that come with having a family for all of us, small or big. And she lives not too far from me in Northeast Ohio, and we're Zooming today. And I'm just going to go ahead and ask Leah her first question of just her family of origin, where her parents and her siblings grew up, and then we'll go from there. So welcome.
Thank you, Lauren, that's great. And I like that question, it's pretty easy. I can start there. my family, we are like lifetime Ohioans. Okay. So there's really nothing that interesting about that. I did branch off, I was always intrigued by other cultures. And in my first life, I was married to a Russian for really about 20 years. I was like my high school sweetheart, married, had 5 children, which was good and bad the way most marriages are, but unfortunately couldn't merge the culture enough to keep it together. And we were actually divorced in 2018. And then I've remarried, and my husband is Matyaj, and Matyaj Major, and he's from Slovenia. So I really do like those Eastern Europeans, I guess you could say. And he and I have a child together, and then I have 4 stepsons. So there are 10 children, and 6 of whom are my biological and the 4 stepchildren. I think I did launch into that to show how different where I'm at now is from where I came from, because we were very middle of the road American family, small. So I had 1 sister and that's it. Mm-hmm. My parents always, married together, 2 peas in a pod. That was my life growing up, and it was good. Mm-hmm. And that's nowhere near where I'm at now. Not that it's less good, but it's certainly more dynamic.
Yeah, I didn't grow up in a big family either. And so I think that's why I looked into coaching for help, and wrote a book and started this podcast. I am learning so much because I ask people whether they grew up in a big family or they have a big family, how did you do all the things? And so I'm doing this for myself selfishly, but I hope other people benefit. And I have to say, my husband's family is from Poland. I mean, great grandparents. And on my mom's side, all the ancestors came from Poland. So not Slovenian, but, Eastern Europeans. Right. Great.
That's right.
Yeah. So go ahead and let's move into today and in your current times. So you and is it Matyaj? Am I pronouncing your husband's name correctly?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. So with the 10 kids, what are the ages?
So it starts at 2, and he's a mutual, meaning we had him together. Then it goes up to 18, and then we have duplicates of most ages. So we've got the 17, 18. Then we have 2 15s. We have 3 10s. We have 1 6, 1 8, and then 2. I think that all adds up to 10, but it ranges from 2 all the way up to 18. And really, the 3 10s give you a run for your money, let me tell you.
Oh, I bet. I can't repeat that. I'm not good enough interviewer yet. I'm like, wait, I should have written this down. Wow. Okay, so, but they're not multiples?
So there's 1 set of twins.
Okay, the 10s have to be, Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you gave birth to twins or he brought twins into the marriage?
He brought twins to the marriage.
Okay. Okay, so you had singletons.
Yes.
Okay, got it.
I could say something about those ages and the fact that it doesn't just all splay out into separate ages, but that they are, there is this overlap. Because I have to say, that's really nothing shy of a miracle. Mm-hmm. Because had I met somebody that wasn't aware of where I was at as a mother with mm-hmm. the ages of my children, mm-hmm. I don't know that I could have related as well. Mm. I mean, we were living two separate lives, you know, both having gone through divorce, both dealing with similar age children. We were like in very similar camps, very different, very different. He was a bachelor for like 8 years. I was mm-hmm. newly divorced, mm-hmm. more or less. Mm-hmm. And so there was like a huge gulf just in timing as far as being ready and understanding marriage all over again. I never left that field mm-hmm. and he did. Mm-hmm. So I think that that can bring a whole new dynamic to remarriage and family life when you're used to being an every other week dad. And then you're back to being full time.
Oh, wow.
There's a real aspect to that. And, you know, also just accepting each other's children mm-hmm. as fully fledged members of the one family, mm-hmm. even when there is a rotation and different mm-hmm. scheduling. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, the four of the smaller ones, so our 2-year-old always, then, you know, my three smaller ones are always with us. So they're full time and it's become a sort of new normal. Mm-hmm. And that is seemingly okay, but it's still, when you are divorced and remarried, what I find, one of the things that maybe other mothers may be able to relate to, there's a sense that your motherhood is on demand like times two. Because mm-hmm. you've got your kids, which are still primarily yours more so than they're his, but he shares it. Then you've got his kids, which you're the mom, so you take it on, and it's also kind of primarily yours because you're the mom. And, you know, it's like a lot of pressure sometimes.
That makes total sense. I could completely see how that would happen. I guess I've never been in the situation, so I just haven't really thought about it.
Yeah.
That's so great that you're here to shed light on that, because I'm sure there's people dealing with that every day that are like, does anyone else get this? Wow. And so I guess it just takes a lot of communication. I mean, are you just kind of constantly not only – thinking in your own mind, okay, how do I want this to be? How is this looking? How's this feeling? Do I need to make changes, you know, with this relationship with that child and disciplining that child? And how do I approach this child who's not as much mine, whatever that means, and or who's mine?
Yeah.
And then you just have to talk to Matiage a lot, I guess.
Well, we talk constantly. I mean, we are the most talkative. I've never known a couple quite as talkative, which could be good and bad. Sometimes we need to pay more attention to those children. But anyways, we definitely, the discipline that you brought up, that point has been a sticking point, no doubt. Mm-hmm. So because you don't discipline your stepchildren the same way you do your own. And there's also mm-hmm. a lot of jealousy. You have mm-hmm. to be very careful that the stepchildren feel the love that's as genuine from you as it is to your biological children. Mm-hmm. When I'm tucking in my 6-year-old and the twins, and they're also, you know, they all just turned a next age. So they're 10 now, but they're young enough to still want their mother to be very close to them. Mm-hmm. So I kiss one, I kiss all, you know, sure. I touch one, I pray with one, it's all. It's become such a collective goodnight experience that one can hardly make it through without falling asleep. Somehow it works itself out.
Oh, wow. Well, God bless you for giving them all that one-on-one attention. Instead of saying,
but I fail.
Go to bed. That's kind of what we do. We're like, group hug, go to bed. That's beautiful, though. And you mentioned your husband was a bachelor for 8 years. I'm just mm-hmm. having some visuals in my mind here of my husband as a bachelor, you know, before we got married. You know, we just laugh about how his condo was, like wires were hanging. He was in the middle of projects. He thought of painting a wall one color and then didn't. And
oh, yes.
There was a room where he just like put all his like receipts and change, but like all over the floor. I was like, what happened here? You know, like just, we have bachelor friends, and even my teenage daughter notices, she's like, they really need a girlfriend. Like you can just, a woman does something, you know, I mean, there are some guys that are good at those things. I know they are traditionally girl things, but there are some guys that can do that. But that's kind of a funny, superficial difference between men and women. But what other things did he have to get used to? I mean, you said the kids, that's just a lot of work, a lot of noise, a lot of responsibility. How did he my question is, yeah, how did he handle it transitioning?
Well, it's very interesting. Again, we're sharing similar bags of transition. What I mean by that is, you mentioned the room of just coins and dangling wires or what have you. Well, we still have that going on. My husband's like Bob the Builder. He owns a construction company, our landscape company, but does construction work and all of this. So that is absolutely something that's very unlike me. I'm very organized. Mm-hmm. I like to have things done, even if they're not done right, let them be done. So I have to deal with that part of him. And he has to deal with the fact that, I guess, because I've had so much kind of on my plate, because I've been going to school, I have a PhD, I've been teaching, I've been doing things the whole way through having children. So I've always juggled more than one thing at once, for better and worse. And because of that, a lot of things that would be acutely annoying coming from the children, they hardly faze me. I feel like it takes a shovel hit my head before I'm really aware of what's happening. So he doesn't like that. He wants me to be more on top of, you know, things with the kids. And you know, I think that's a good influence to have on me. It's very important to be attentive and to be aware of what's happening before they all fall off the slide into their abyss. But we have to learn from each other, put up with one another, and then learn from each other and make good and, you know, cooperate with the Lord so that good can be born and it doesn't fall apart. I think that's also a really important point. When you are coming from a situation where you lost your past life, it's like a death.
Sure.
And you carry this sense that, as good as it might feel or be, you're always worried it could end. And how do you get past that? I mean, that question is always kind of with me. And actually, my husband, we challenge each other quite a bit. And he will say to me, your insecurity is, it's hurting us, and you need to let that go. But it's not easy to let that go. You have to kind of live through your feelings and the fears and what's reality inside of your soul. And I would say the only thing that I've been able to find as my rock is truly faith and prayer, and trusting that, first of all, God's never going to abandon us. We're always cooperating with him. And, you know, he gave me all these children. It's not for no good reason.
Sure. How did you process that grief? I'm sure there was a moment of, or I don't know, weeks, months, I have no idea, of, I wish the divorce didn't happen, or I wish the marriage could have gone this way, or, you know, just questioning, feeling maybe negative feelings. How do you handle that? Or what advice do you have?
I really think you cannot put that into any kind of time frame or any kind of formula. You have to live through accepting where you were wrong, accepting that life is, it's fallen. This world is fallen. But, you know, having faith and realizing that God will always be with us, that the mother of God is helping us. I mean, I was told I had a 1% chance of ever having a child. And I knew through prayer to the mother of God that I would have a baby, and I knew my womb was open. So miracles along the way, my priest once told me, life will never get easier, but you'll get more tools in your shed. And I found that to be 100% true. And I'm 43. I'm sure there's years where I have yet to learn things, but I know there's a few years where I've learned some really hard lessons. So
have you ever gone back to that doctor who said you had a 1% chance of getting pregnant?
He was there when I had my first two, obviously, because we were going
good.
And he was like, wow, you're a really special lady. I thought, no, I'm not. This is the mother of God.
I just knew
I was supposed to be a mother. I knew it was supposed to happen and it was going to go. But I was really floored by all the challenges. It's almost like, I think God will allow for us to have certain challenges to make us stronger before even bigger challenges will kind of befall us.
Yeah, but you went on to have 6 biological kids.
I did, and I will say, you know, every story, I think, when you're pregnant, you're growing, that baby's growing within you, and I always would cross myself and like think about how the Lord is the giver of life, and that was always like such an awesome gift that I was carrying that in my womb, which is another reason I never wanted to close down that opportunity. But my 6th was such a shock. I mean, it was not intended. It was not at all in my plan. I couldn't believe I was getting married, let alone all that. It was just way much. And when I actually in my womb, the doctor called and had a really somber sounding voice. I said, "What's going on?" And she said, "Well, you're going to need to do genetic counseling. It looks like the child has Klinefelter's syndrome." And I thought, oh my gosh. I mean, I had recently been divorced. Mm. I ended up getting pregnant very suddenly. There's this new marriage, new family. It was insanity to the highest degree of my life. And then I heard this horrible news. And inside of this whirlwind, there was a voice and it said, "It's okay. It's okay." And I didn't believe the voice at first. I was arguing with it, saying it can't possibly be.
No, it's not. It's really not okay. Do you see what's going on right now?
But all of that to say, there's two things to say. One, that genetic testing is definitely not foolproof.
Right.
So very often it will give you a wrong diagnosis. Mm. And I got very upset with the counselors involved with all this. I even asked the woman, I said, "If you are wrong, and I will never have an abortion because that's the direction they try to take you in."
Right.
I said, "Many would. Why are we testing everybody when there's a chance you could be wrong and that baby could be eliminated?" Mm-hmm. And of course, there's not really a solid answer on that, but I would definitely caution anyone going through a similar situation. They are often wrong, way more than you think, especially if they test you early on. They tested me at 10 weeks. It was too early. That baby that I had, Charlie, is 100%. He's my smartest little guy.
Mm, isn't that funny?
No extra X chromosome, nothing wrong at all. So
I've heard that. I've heard that quite a few times, that they were wrong. Mm-hmm. It happened to friends and my sister. And even if they're right, yeah, it's
right.
So sad what they're looking to do with that information. I had read on your profile about your PhD, but I forgot to mention that in your introduction, which I think goes against that narrative that if you want to have a big family, you probably should just like skip college altogether and never leave the kitchen, right? And so can you tell us what it's in and, you know, where you went to school and just a little bit about that?
Sure, sure. Well, that stage of things was from Kent State University, and that's in composition and rhetoric, and actually it was addiction rhetoric. So I studied at an addiction clinic, wrote a dissertation on the language and the narrative between the physician and the patients and really what they were saying but not saying through their conceptual metaphors. But that's a whole other bag, which we won't get into because it's not really that interesting.
That goes way over my head. I don't know if I could handle that.
I moved away. I mean, that was my first life, was into all of that, but my real love was story. Mm-hmm. My real love has always been story and people, and I think with my heart, always, mm-hmm. and probably more than my brain, and it oftentimes can overshadow my brain and all of that. Maybe women are wired in this way, but I actually took a career move and shifted into financial wellness education. So that's where I'm at now. I'm a financial wellness educator, mm-hmm. and I'm really actively looking if there's businesses or families that would like some financial literacy. I want to help people understand better how their money works, mm-hmm. and what they need to do to protect them and to have a stronger future, because mm-hmm. that came to a head for me when I was divorced. Mm-hmm. And I realized the need and how I had nothing in order, and I had relied on my past life to support me through everything. Mm-hmm. I had to reconfigure everything. And like I said, with my husband's dangling wires and the room full of coins, I knew that I needed to bring some kind of practical element that could keep it all together just in case.
Oh, wow. And so you help people like learn how to save and how to make money, or just all of that? Like
all of that. I educate, and mm-hmm. I also can set up accounts. And mm-hmm. I can help people get out of debt. Mm-hmm. I can pretty much offer a lot of solutions. So if anybody had need or interest, I'm mm-hmm. like, that's what I'm looking to build up right now. And ultimately mm-hmm. we aim for it to be a family business. We have all these dependents, if you will. Why not draw them into, you know, what we can do as a family? That's mm-hmm. the goal.
Mm-hmm. I hope people can contact you. I'll give your information at the end of the show. But I just want to ask something that I like to ask all moms of big families. Like, what are some tips you have, or maybe just ways you figured out worked for you guys in terms of those things that people who have like one or two kids, they just can't wrap their mind around? Like, how do you feed 10 kids?
Yeah.
Do you drive 10 kids? Do you ever go on vacation? Like, do you afford? Do they eat? Do you clothe them? You know, people can't imagine, right?
Oh, right. And believe me, sometimes I can't. My kids always ask. I'll pick them up from school or whatever. What's for dinner? And I always say food, food. That's what's for dinner. here's the key, at least for me. Mm-hmm. A lot of the particulars that you can obsess with when you have fewer on your plate, they go away. And mm-hmm. so you're thinking much larger and you're thinking in broader strokes. Like, for example, I always try to get healthy food. Holistic wellness is a big component of where I come from. It's what mm-hmm. I love. Mm-hmm. So I try to have lots of fruits and vegetables. Only mm-hmm. a few of them eat that, you know? So I try to have some protein. I try to have some starch. And then it's kind of like, it's all laid out and people can pick what they will. Now mm-hmm. I have one child who only eats jelly, peanut butter, and like a health food shake. I mean, it's really bad. I don't know mm-hmm. how he survives. I truly don't.
That's my daughter. She ate like that for probably 8 years. She's 13 now. She's eating other things, but
food is actually a big issue. It's because I mean, obviously you have to have it frequently. It has to be there always. Going grocery shopping is really something. It's almost like where I get my workout in. That's mm-hmm. how I feel sometimes. But then like dynamics as far as driving people places. This is something, I have a minivan, of course, which I don't love. And then my husband has trucks because of what he does. And we always had to take two vehicles and they're always like, you know, jam packed. Mm-hmm. And that's, I don't think there's an easy answer. If any other mom of a large family has an answer, I don't know. People have said, get a bus. My 2-year-old's favorite word is bus. I think he certainly wants one. The idea of ever being able to drive a car, maybe even a red one, sounds so lovely.
My friend says that because we both have the 15 passengers. And she's like, one day I just want a small car to drive around. I just want to do errands in a little car.
Right, right.
One day
actually has a Camaro in our garage, mm-hmm. you know, with the dangling wires. And the Camaro doesn't work or anything, but it's a dream. It's a dream for the future.
It's like, you might have your convertible, I have my Camaro. Oh, that right. is so funny. Your husband sounds so delightful. And he sounds like a lot of fun. What are some ways that, you know, he has helped you to grow? I'm sure there's many, but if you could pick out a couple. I'm just thinking, I had that visual of my husband, but I know also me. Now I know you weren't a newlywed, like you were divorced, it was a little bit different, but going into our marriage, I was a newlywed. I was real young and just hadn't lived on my own. He taught me so much, you know, because he had lived on his own from like 18. And he had done so much and bought his own house. And, you know, we kind of grew up together in that sense. He's very responsible. And he's very hardworking. At one point, he worked 3 jobs. And so, you know, we don't give them enough credit. But yeah, what are just some things? I'm sure you're so grateful in a way that the divorce allowed you to meet him. So like, what are some good things that have come from your life because of
this is a great question and something I should probably focus on every single day, because when you ask that, I instantly know. He taught me how to have a best friend as my husband, mm-hmm. how to be a friend with my husband, how to accept the strongest hug, even though he's super hot and I'm dying in the middle of the night. But he teaches me how to let love come together in a way that I don't want to say I never had. I had love, of course. I mean, but I grew apart in my marriage. And I don't know, others may relate to this. We were married. We met at 17, married at 21, you know, all those years with lots of children. He would do his thing, I would do mine, and it just distanced us, right? Mm-hmm. So in this case, I met somebody who, yes, he'd been a bachelor for 8 years, looking for the right person, really actively looking while he had lots and lots of girlfriends, which, you know, great. But there, and that has to be worked through too, just because we come with pasts, we come with baggage, you know, and my husband's a ton of fun. Everybody thinks so. So that's something that it's great, but it's also something I have to accept. He comes from a world that I'm not fully a part of yet, even though it's 2 years in. You know, it's his world and now we have our world. And so you have to be accepting of that. And I think as long as you have that giving love, and it's got to be constant. And like today was a rough day, so I need to call him when we're off this Zoom call. I need to say to him, hey, you're my best friend. I just remembered.
I just did a podcast all about you.
Right.
Best friend. Oh, that's beautiful. Well, that's marriage, but that's all relationships, right? There's the hard and the painful, and then there's the good and the beautiful. And hopefully we focus more on the good. And if we focus more on the good, we'll find it. But it's we have to tell ourselves, let's think about the positive. We all do, right? That's what I do in coaching. And speaking of coaching, tell us all about where people can find you. And I want people to be able to contact you if they want financial help.
Yeah, thank you. So it's Major with an E, MAJER, investments3 at gmail.com. So that's my email, easy to remember because it's my last name, Major with an E, three, or Major investments3 at gmail.com. And then I have some things I'm putting together as far as like a social media presence and that sort of thing. But yeah, I'm actively looking to build up a client base and also education opportunities. I really want to go into schools, businesses, and help people see, financial literacy.
So needed. Yeah, please go into the schools because my kids have no clue about money. I'm trying. I'm really trying.
Oh,
It's hard because even I don't carry cash. I know my parents are like, "Do you
Yeah.
ever have cash?" I'm like, "No, no one does." But it is good to teach children like how money works. They can't see it
Sure.
because they'll say, "Mom, just use that plastic card." They're like, "You don't have any money?" I go, "No, I do. It's just it's on this card. It's hard. It's hard to explain it. It's
I
in the bank.
know.
Well,
I
go to the
know.
bank." Well, it doesn't work like that.
I know.
So, oh, well, that's wonderful. I hope listeners that you can contact Leah, and if you have trouble with that email, just contact me and I will forward your information to her so that she can help you learn about your finances and get out of debt. We all need to do that. And yeah, just save and grow your money. Well, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for sharing with us your story. It's a beautiful story. I love learning about blended families, step families, and thank you for being so vulnerable and open about your divorce and adding on these new kids. And you have a wonderful family. I hope we get to meet in person.
I do too. You're
Yeah.
wonderful. I want to say one thing though,
Go
because when
ahead.
you said save your money, I thought to myself, oh my goodness, who can? One thing, like invest it. Don't be afraid to invest so your money can grow. So that's something that I talk about it a lot, and I'll talk with anyone on that level. But that's not really the focus here. This show is great. I really appreciate the work you're doing,
Yeah.
and God bless you for all your work on this.
Oh, thank you. Well, yeah, you're right though. I mean, people who want to have another kid, a lot of times their objection is money. So now I'm just going to give them your
Yeah.
email address.
No, actually, because we had the same situation. We had
Yeah.
all these kids. What are we doing? So we set up accounts for all of them. And I was able to research what would be best and what to do and how much to put and all of that. It's one of those things where there's time value. It's going to grow. We don't have to
Yeah.
do much.
All
So
right. Thank you, Leah.
thank
Have
you.
a wonderful
Bye-bye.
day.